We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, about where he's been, where he's going, and all of that kind of stuff. So I hope you enjoy listening to the four experts. They're all absolutely fantastic to speak to. And my thanks to those four guys for giving up the time to speak to you, the True Faith listeners. If you like the interviews, I've got the full unedited version of each interview with each interviewee on our Patreon platform, which is £6.60 a month for about 30 additional Newcastle United podcasts every single month as we build up to one of the most exciting seasons in memory. So I'll stop talking. I'm going to leave you with the guys. I started by asking Pedro, basically where Bruno came from, what football club he was with in Brazil, and how his career developed. Enjoy.
My name is Pedro Brienza. I am editor-in-chief of Peleja. There is a YouTube channel and a media group focused in football documentaries and fan culture in Brazil and all parts of the world. Atlético Paranaense is a regional club, but it stands right now among the biggest clubs in Brazil. It's a rising club. It's getting some money. They get a very, I don't know how to put this, but they're growing in the Brazilian scenario. Atlético Paranaense, they got like this, they peaked at the early 2000s where they won the Brazilian championship. But in the recent years, they're like evolving young players and trying to turn the club in a big company, in a big business. But it's still, they don't have an owner, but they have like a president, the same president for a long time, the same political group for a long time. And they are investing in the new stadium, the young players, the academy. So Atlético Paranaense is like a rising club in Brazil, but it's a regional one. They are very famous in their state. Brazil has like more than 20 states. It's a gigantic country. And Bruno was a very big sale in 2019, I think. And Atlético Paranaense was, I think was like the biggest sale of all time from Atlético Paranaense to any club. In Brazil, fees up to 15 million euros is a very big deal for a club. In the inside market, this never happens. And this kind of value in exchange of players never happens. It's always to Europe or China some years ago. But it's helped Atlético Paranaense with their project of getting a bigger club, getting a better academy, getting some better young players. So it's just part of the process of a lot of Brazilian clubs to try to compete in international level, abroad, not just in South America. So Atlético Paranaense like reinvested all this money in their own academy, in their own stadium, not in other players. So it was a big deal for the project. So this kind of value is not common in Brazil. It seems it is because every season has some wonder kid, like say for Real Madrid and stuff. But it was a huge deal for a club as Atlético Paranaense.
Yeah. So my name is Peter Pankowski. It's a pleasure to meet you all. What I do is I work in the league analysis department of Football Radar, which is, in terms, my league has been mainly Brazil Serie B. But also my sole interest has pretty much been Brazil a lot of the time. So I've been watching Serie A football as well. Well, to be honest, at first I was a little skeptical, but when I managed to watch him in the Sudamericana, he was actually, what caught my eye is that you have this player who was actually really complex. So right now I think he's not exactly he was playing more of a 6/8 hybrid in terms of position. I'm pretty sure he doesn't play that for Newcastle right now, right? There's Joe Linton and someone else behind him in terms of tactical scheme. But in Brazil, he had to play that because of his work rate. And I think that's where his actually immense work rate has come from. Because you see this young 20-year-old kid, and at the same time, he's got technical and brilliance and elegance on the ball. He's able to keep the ball under possession, has various amounts of, like, an array of passing ability. And at the same time, you see him start running, like, basically like crazy, trying to aid this team in defense every single time, like, the team's down on a counterattack or anything like that. Which, for Brazilian fans, that's exceptional because they do love work rate. They do love someone who shows passion and is able to help as much as he can. And I don't think it's just passion in itself. It's just they do like a work rate, that work rate type midfielder that can impact like both phases of the game. And when I started watching him up close, be it via highlights, because we have access to different games, even recorded games, and catching as much live games as I possibly could because of like the late timeline, I was really impressed. I wasn't sure he was going to make a jump like, say, Vinicius Jr. or Rodrigo or someone else who jumped straight to Real Madrid or say a Liverpool or something like that. But I thought Leon fit in perfectly. I was hoping Chelsea would get him, to be honest, but they made Mateo Kovacic's move permanent, and I was certain he was going to move to Europe. I wasn't exactly certain where, but I think Lyon fit in perfectly at the time.
My name's Andy Brassel. I'm a European football journalist, and I work primarily with The Football Ramble, TalkSport, and The Guardian. Well, I guess when Bruno turned up, they had a kind of lapsed relationship with Brazil, Lyon. And, you know, it's something that fired the imagination of the supporters when they were coming, the biggest team in France at the start of the 21st century. It all goes back really to two things. The reason that you have this relationship between Lyon and Brazil. Firstly, you have Marcelo, who used to play for Lyon, not the one who recently left for Bordeaux, but previous Marcelo. He stayed in touch with Lyon once he left. He did some scouting for the club over there and started to bring players over. Now, this sort of accelerated after the arrival of Sonny Anderson, who had already succeeded in the French league for Monaco, was at Barcelona, and he was the first really big Lyon signing at the end of the 90s, with money coming in from the Pathé Film Group, who owned part of the club. And Sonny Anderson was such an influential player. I think sometimes it's forgotten how big Sonny Anderson was, not just in a French context, but in a European context. You know, classic number nine, great goal scorer. And I guess quite a long way from what people would think of as being a typical Brazilian footballer, if you like, just hungry for goals, and that was it. And he turned scoring goals into an absolute art form. People loved him, and it's interesting, you know, the thing that Thierry Henry does with, like, rolling his socks up over his knees, and people think Thierry Henry introduced that to school children. Well, Sonny Anderson introduced that to Thierry Henry. So Henry did everything he could to copy Sonny Anderson in training when he was a kid at Monaco. He absolutely worshipped him. And that is, I suppose, a little allegory of how influential Sonny Anderson was within the game. He was part of that Lyon side that started winning stuff. As were Juninho, who came over as they started to seriously go for the title, and Claudio Cassapa, of course, who Newcastle fans know pretty well, and who is still at Lyon actually as assistant coach to Peter Bosch, having been defensive coach there before. It was always clear that he would go back to Lyon after he packed in his career as a player as well. And you know, I guess it's like any sort of enclave of overseas players at a club. Success breeds success. So as Juninho, Cassapa became leaders. Later on, you've got Chris. You've got who's terrific for them at centre-back. You've got Fred. You've got so many Brazilian players who were really, really important to Lyon. But I think the interesting thing is after Juninho left, and I guess we get to about 2008, 2009, his legs really start to go, even though he is the greatest free kick taker of all time, in my opinion. You know, I think you look at Beckham, Roberto Carlos, they have a certain type of free kick. Juninho could do it all. You know, the curler, the daisy cutter, knuckle ball, everything. I mean, he went and studied taking free kicks with Toulouse Rugby Club at some point to work out how their kickers kick the ball, just so he could figure out another string to his bow, really. He had a sort of godlike status there. I don't think it's any exaggeration to say that. I know that tends to be a cliche, but it's genuinely the case with Juninho. And they wanted him to come back as coach. He never had the right diplomas. And eventually they appointed him as sporting director with very mixed success, I think it's fair to say. He left last winter. And again, that's part of the Bruno Guimarães story. We'll get to that in a second. But Juninho relit the flame for Lyon and Brazil, because obviously he's a player with enormous history with Brazilian football and the Brazilian national team to a lesser extent as well. He was sort of a jack of all trades rather than an outstanding player in various Brazil sides, but an enormous amount of respect. Someone who speaks really intelligently on a number of issues. One of the few footballers, Juninho, actually, to stand up to Bolsonaro and his government, which I think is quite interesting as well. He's a very much of the people kind of guy. And when it came to bringing in Bruno Guimarães, a lot went wrong for Lyon for Juninho as a sporting director, mainly because he hadn't done the job before. He didn't really know what he was doing. And Jean-Michel Aulas, the president, hoped to hand over everything to him. He wasn't really ready for it, and he had to come back and help him out. But what he was good at, of course, is bringing in top-quality Brazilian players, because Bruno, for example, when it got to the end of 2019, start of 2020, he had a choice. And it seemed like quite an obvious choice, because he could have gone to Atletico Madrid under Diego Simeone. He could have gone to Lyon. And there is no doubt that without Juninho, the Bruno Guimarães to Lyon deal doesn't happen. Now, I think as well, you see a little glimpse of the intelligence that Bruno has here, because Juninho clicks with him and gets him to see what he could do there. There's a bit less of a sense of, can he become an important first team player straight away at Atletico Madrid? On the other hand, Bruno is someone who has a plan for how he's going to do stuff. He has a plan for how he's going to map out his career. And not only is Juninho able to click into this and relate to him and say, look, this is what you're going to be. Look at all the Brazilian players who've succeeded here before. This is the role you're going to have in the team. And in fact, he went as far as to say, with Luka Tusar, very highly rated defensive midfielder at the time, he said publicly, Juninho, which didn't go down too well with Tusar, is, we need a defensive midfielder who's better on the ball. And that is you. Basically, that player is you. And I think Bruno looked at it and he thought, this is the place where I can really make an impact on European football straight away. And funnily enough, I think he probably applies the same criteria to when he moves to Newcastle, because I think a lot of people look at that and think it's not an obvious move. He's been linked with Arsenal, other clubs in the top bracket of the Premier League. But Newcastle realise what Bruno wants. He realises what he wants. And that's why it's such a great success straight away, because he hit the ground running and then some at Lyon. And obviously he's done the same in the Northeast as well.
I'm Chris Woff. I'm Newcastle United correspondent for The Athletic. Well, Bruno Guimaraes was someone who I'd heard that Newcastle had liked for quite a while, but that is along with a lot of other players. I'm not saying that when it was coming into the start of January that I thought that Newcastle would end the window by signing him. And but as the year sort of turned from December into January, the message we were getting was that Newcastle had found someone they thought as quote-unquote number six plus, is what I was told, someone who would be an excellent sort of, in theory, defensive midfielder, but also had everything to be a potentially a number eight as well. And it was difficult to find out who that was for the first few weeks in January. I knew they were looking at Yves Bissouma, but I knew that wasn't exactly the same sort of player. I knew they were looking at a few others. And his name sort of popped up a few times, but actually it was first reported in France when we found out at this end. And then checked it out that he was definitely the one that they wanted. And it progressed relatively quickly from that stage. But he's someone who, as I say, Newcastle scouts had looked at for a long, long time. His numbers are just were so ridiculous in so many ways, in terms of he was really good at everything, as you've subsequently seen at Newcastle. And so he pops up in so many sort of data radars, that not just at Newcastle, but loads of other clubs. And so many had looked at him. Obviously, Arsenal had been linked for a long, long while. But it was really Newcastle decided to make the move after they'd gone to Jeddah for their mid-season training camp, and they had a sort of summit between Al Ramain was there, Yasser Al Ramain, the chairman, then so was Staveley and Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall, who basically formed really the majority of the transfer cabinet, if you want to call it that, or committee in January. And Al Ramain gave them basically the go-ahead to go and spend the money, and they decided they were going to go and try and pursue Bruno and bring him in. As the one difference to the rest of what they did in January, the rest of what they did in January was sign players with proven Premier League experience, most of whom were late 20s, who would make an immediate impact. With Bruno Guimaraes, it was a bit more of a calculated gamble, but it was a gamble as to how he would make an impact mid-season coming to the Premier League.
What we do know is that Steve Nixon, the head of recruitment at Newcastle United, has headed to Brazil to finalise this deal for Bruno Guimaraes.
Breaking news, and we're hearing Newcastle have agreed a fee with Lyon for the midfielder Bruno Guimaraes. We understand the deal is in the region of £30 million. The Brazilian international will undergo a medical in his homeland, hopefully today.
Mega, mega breaking, haven't we? Because Newcastle United have finally announced that they have signed Bruno Guimaraes.
Fantastic news. Player that has so much potential, so much ability. I can guarantee Newcastle fans will be excited when they watch this man in the Premier League this season. He is absolutely the real deal. At 24 years old as well, we know that there's a significant investment from Newcastle.
Newcastle United landed a player who was much sought after across European football. So I asked Peter if he was surprised that relegation threatened Newcastle United was where Bruno ended up.
I wouldn't say so, to be honest. I thought when the deal was struck, I think it was Athletic who reported it, and I was honestly surprised. I thought Arsenal were going to get him because I saw like many links. I wasn't surprised. I wouldn't say. To me, Bruno has always struck me because he's one of those players that he doesn't.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Stats don't do him good. They don't do him justice. Like some people, you know how they have footballers that, for example, if I have to go a biased route, Eden Hazard wasn't exactly a stats type person. I can argue that with anybody because stats never really did him justice. And Bruno is the same because the technical elegance that he has on the ball, the things that he does, the way he's managed to orchestrate pretty much the Newcastle midfield. Ironically, the game versus Arsenal, where they were battling for top four just before the season ended, that was one of his, I reckon, his best games because he just looked so good. And honestly, when I've seen, as I said, I couldn't name you right now like particular games where I've seen him where he's played at this level. I'm not exactly the biggest League One fan, so I watch a lot of football. I don't know how my wife loves me still, but watching pretty much bits of him at Lyon, a lot more Brazilian football, I've always thought that his stats don't paint the full picture with.
I think people are sad that he went because he was a popular person as well as a very valued player. I think people knew he would move on at the moment. A lot of people were surprised it was Newcastle, to be perfectly honest. But in keeping with the way they did their business in January, they got it done quickly, smartly, quite fairly in terms of what they offered. I know a lot of people thought it was on the high side, but I think history can sort of be rewritten. People don't talk about that anymore because he's been so good. I don't think anyone's really quibbling about the fee anymore, but I know there were some people who thought it was a bit on the high side at first. Newcastle did their homework and they knew what they were getting. Lyon fans and people who cover the club, people who know French football knew he would go at some point. They were a little surprised it was Newcastle. Not surprised necessarily that it was the Premier League because it was clear that he was going all the way to the top. But as we've seen, not just from the way he's played, but from the way he's spoken about the club, he's unashamedly ambitious in terms of what he expects Newcastle to do next. I think retrospectively, it's maybe a better fit than a lot of people thought it was at the time.
Bruno is in the best form of his career. He's never played so well. He's never been so decisive. He never scored that much goals in his whole career. And they're seeing like, but they, as they see Newcastle not playing the Champions League, not playing against the biggest club in Europe, he's like, okay, he's a good player in a medium team. He's not a good player as in the best ones. So we are seeing Bruno as a very good prospect. In the future, he'll be very well. And I personally like him a lot. When I talked with Norman in January, I think he said to me, man, you are selling me like the next Kaká. I said to him, I don't know if he would be like the next Kaká, but he's a very talented player. He's a modern player. He can defend well, he attacks well. He's a participative in the game. He touches the balls every time. He's have very good positioning in the attack. So I'm a fan of Bruno football.
Well, there's always been a sort of confidence a self-confidence within the club since the takeover that things will be all right eventually and we're making the right decisions for the right reasons. And so in that sense, I don't think that they did hesitate too much in terms of making the signing happen. But there was also a realization that if Newcastle went down, this was very much going to be a six-month signing. That even if Bruno had come in and hadn't necessarily particularly done anything, he wasn't going to stay and play in the Championship. That they were going to have to find a way to move him on this summer. And it was interesting that the midfield was really probably the strongest area of the team in terms of what Howard built in the second half of the season. He already had that three of Joe Willock, Joe Linton, and Jonjo Shelvey, who were performing so well. And so they had a little bit of a buffer by bringing in Bruno. They wanted a little bit of a different element in midfield, someone who was so good at holding up the ball, someone who could find a forward pass, which they didn't necessarily have beyond Jonjo Shelvey's mainly sort of long-distance passing. And so it was worth it. It was a risk, but it was a calculated risk. And one that we can get Bruno in January, and if we survive, so many more clubs are going to try and sign him in the summer when we think that we will fall further down the queue. If we can front load this, if we can get him early, then we will beat a lot of clubs to him, and hopefully he will have an impact in the short term, not just in the summer. And obviously that is subsequent to what he's had. I will remember, I think it's one of the most astonishing press conferences I've been to when Bruno was unveiled at St. James's Park, because Newcastle was still in the relegation zone. They'd won two games all season, albeit that they'd won the most recent match. But Bruno sits in front of everyone and he's asked, why have you signed? What is it the owners have said to you? And he responds by saying that Newcastle are going to be a world power and that the plan is to get into the Champions League regularly and eventually win the Champions League. And we'd heard the owners talk big in terms of when they first took over the club, but to actually be selling that vision to the main signing that you make in January, that's when it really sort of hit home for me, sitting there listening to, albeit it was via a translator, but so you first hear him saying this in Portuguese and then the translator then repeats it, because you hear him say Champions League, but you're not quite sure exactly what he said, and then the translator brings it through to you. And that was just a start. And I think that showed the self-assurance that Bruno has, and which he displays on the pitch and which he has everywhere. It does border on arrogance, but really what it is just supreme self-confidence in everything he's going to do, and he drives standards, and you've seen that in Newcastle since he's arrived.
So I wasn't surprised that when you put the right pieces around him, he actually excelled. Yes, because to me, it was one of the things that Newcastle lacked, because if I have to put it into comparison, Jonjo Shelvey isn't exactly named as a creator, but I don't think he's exactly what Bruno can do. I think Bruno can do much more. Correct me if I'm wrong. I wasn't really surprised that when he, you know, Eddie Howe gave him like this settling in period where he didn't start him right from the start, but with time he just eased him in. And when he eased him in and he adjusted himself and saw English football, he just took off.
Wayne absolutely pouring down now here at St Mary's. Here comes the corner for Newcastle. Byrne wins it. Oh, what a finish! Absolutely spectacular from Bruno Guimarães. That is quite some way to score your first goal for Newcastle. Impudent, outstanding, stunning.
I don't have words. It was always my dream to play in Premier League. Newcastle, it's all the things for me. I'm so happy for today, and always was incredible. I want to be a legend here. Yeah, I enjoy a lot. Here now, it's my home. I want to play 100 times here.
This is excellent work by the substitute, Willock. Clash off the ball between Mendy and Joe Linton. We'll look back at that in a moment. Oh, Newcastle have snatched it! Joe Willock and Bruno Guimarães on hand to give Newcastle United the most wonderful and perhaps most unlikely of wins.
It's not surprised me that he's played well. Two things have surprised me. Firstly, I still can't believe that Eddie Howe waited that long to bleed him into the team. I mean, I think, you know, you remember him coming on in like the last couple of minutes in the home game against Everton. And the crowd were absolutely euphoric that night, really. And, you know, it was the night where it felt as if everything changed in Newcastle's season. But I was still sitting there thinking, what is he waiting for? You know, especially after, I remember Jonjo Shelvey making that crazy tackle in the first half that he could have been red carded for. And you're thinking, at some point, he's gonna send on Bruno to cover Shelvey because it's risky leaving him on. But, you know, it worked for Eddie Howe. You know, he managed that spell fantastically well. But I think what we saw is when Bruno did get into the team, it's like they'd been keeping him in the dark, feeding him on raw meat. He was so ready. He was over ready almost when he came in. But I think the other thing that we saw, I mean, he was clearly coming in to fill a need that they had, because I think you look at Newcastle in the first half of the season, they not only look a bit thin in midfield, they look really unathletic in midfield. And that was a huge problem, I think, for the team, especially when you don't have much of the ball and you want to get up the pitch. That is something that he really helps with. And I think the difference is, two differences really, in terms of his position and his role. And as I said to you before, when we were talking about it off air, it surprised me how many goals he scored, absolutely, because, you know, you think of him scoring 1-2 goals a season for Lyon. I think there were two things with that. Firstly, that need to make the team more athletic. And Joe Ellington made a huge difference in that sense as well, bringing a bit of athleticism to midfield, enabling them to get up the pitch quickly once they get the ball back off the opposition. And, you know, I think Bruno realised, if someone's going to go, it's going to be me. I think the other thing is, he's used to playing with better players at Lyon. I think he made the most of the fact that he had that extra bit of liberty. Whereas at Lyon, he was like a very high-class piano carrier, but a piano carrier nevertheless. You know, his job was to get the ball to Paquetá, to Ryan Cherki, to Carl Toko Akambi, to any of those players, really. You know, his job was to win it and transfer it. Whereas now, I think he really enjoys being the best player in the team. Is something that's clearly, he feels he's off the leash, and he's really embraced that. He's really enjoyed showing the other side to his skill set, what more he can do. And I don't know if that feels like a sort of limited time offer for him, really, because as Newcastle progress, and, you know, I'm not saying it'll be Paquetá, but they'll have other players, I think, that will come in front of him, which will lead to him minding the shop a little bit more. So maybe he's just enjoying it while he can.
Of all the things that Newcastle expected from Bruno, they didn't expect that many goals. I mean, he sort of averages one or two most seasons. He brings so much, but actually goals is not something that he has done a lot of. But he's had a bit of a freedom in this Newcastle side in terms of when he has played. He has sometimes played as a number eight, he's sometimes played as a number six, but particularly when he's a number eight, he's given a bit more license to get forward. And I think that having someone like Joe Linton in the team liberates so many of the other midfielders in terms of he can cover defensively a lot of that area. He's so physically imposing that Newcastle have that ability to break forward. Joe Willock's been able to do it at times. And then when you've had Bruno doing that. And so he's had a bit of fortune here and there in terms of, I mean, the Southampton goal is a one in a million, even for a player of his quality. To actually score that goal was astonishing. Obviously, although he pressed well at Norwich, he also just was passed the ball by Tim Krull. Yes, finished it in a wonderful fashion as well. So he's had a little bit of fortune here and there, but there's also been a desire. And I think that is shown by that Leicester game. He wants to be the man. He's thriving in this atmosphere. He loves the fact that he is the one who is almost leading this sort of revolution at Newcastle, if you want to call it this. There's a beginning of the new era. He is the poster boy of that, the poster boy of the future. And he seems to be embracing it and just growing from strength to strength because of that. I don't think that it's realistic to assume that he's going to keep scoring at this rate, but I do think that he can score far more frequently than he has done previously, because Newcastle are going to give him more opportunities to do that. And the fact that he can also play comfortably in either the six or the eight role, he can switch between them. He can play as the sitter by himself. He can play in a two there. He could probably play in a couple of other positions if he wanted as well. He is now the first name on the team sheet just about. I don't think that he's gone from a period where he first came in and you didn't know when he was going to first get that opportunity because the Newcastle midfield were playing so well and Eddie Howe didn't want to disrupt it, to now you got that. I remember he left him out at Spurs and Newcastle were awful. And that wasn't just because Bruno was left out of the side. But from that point on, he didn't leave him out the team again. He came on, and even in a game when Newcastle were awful, he still tried to make things happen. He still was the one who looked like something was going to happen. And the goals are just one element of the goals are brilliant and the goals were worth so much. But I actually think that actually what he's brought in terms of all round play, that one player who what Newcastle have been so bad at for so many years is they just can't retain possession. And when they do retain possession, they can't recycle it forward properly. And he always looks for that forward pass. He uses the ball so well. He uses it cleverly and he can take it in dangerous positions. And that's, for me, far more important than the goals that he's brought. The goals aren't sustainable, but the rest of the game is.
Wilson. A short long stand. And Callum Wilson comes down, gets there first. Gimenez! 2-0 for Newcastle. Dustin Chilov, Arsenal's Champions League dream. Despair for Arteta.
What shape does Zero and Bruno fit into that?
I wouldn't say they're worse off than certain teams, not even France, who I think are probably one of the best sides, if not the best national team side, pound for pound, because it's just so much depth. Like I was talking because I have a colleague who also works in Brazil, worked just today. We were talking about the national team, and they basically have two teams, one that can pretty much win the World Cup and another that can probably reach the quarterfinals with ease. So that tells you a lot of where right now Brazil are as a national team. The only issue they may have that is the fullbacks, and even they aren't that bad because they have like Danilo and Alexandre. Yeah, so ironically, his main rival is actually Fred from Manchester United, and to be honest, he's been actually great for the national team of Brazil. I think he's been one of the best, and the manager likes him a lot, and I think that plays a key role because Chiche, he's the manager of Brazil. He has this thing about favoritism, where he prefers certain people in order to keep both a tactical shape and the pecking order himself. So he will never play, for example, two defensive midfielders. So Brazil have Casemiro and Fabinho. He'll never play both at the same time because he wants a pure defensive midfielder, a box-to-box midfielder, and a classic number 10. Whether that is Neymar or Lucas Paquetá, who I think has also been linked to Newcastle, doesn't matter. But yeah, I think in terms of main competition for Bruno, it's probably Fred.
I don't think that Bruno will be a starting 11. I think Fred will be the choice from the coach. It's not what I was talking about. Titi, the coach of the national team, have a strong confidence with the players he's working with since 2018 World Cup. He knows Fred for a long time. He's coached him in Internacional. It's a big club here in Brazil too, when Fred was a young talent. So he followed all Fred's career through the years. And I had the impression that he feels strongly that this cup is the Fred World Cup. And he sees in Bruno like a future for the Brazilian national team. So I don't think he will be in the starting 11. I think Fred will be. Bruno would be my choice. I prefer Bruno playing than Fred. A lot of Brazilians do too. The Brazilian fans doesn't like Fred because he left Brazil so young and he won't anything for Internacional. Internacional was a good team, but Fred wasn't a big star in Internacional. Bruno was different. He was a champion here in Atlético Paranaense. All Brazilians saw him winning a trophy, winning a very important trophy in Brazil.
They do have other options in that position, but he definitely has a chance of starting. And the way he's played in the Premier League has made a massive difference to that. You know, if his idea at the start was one of the pluses from me moving to Newcastle United in the Premier League will be to get me in the starting 11 for Qatar, it's a gamble that has spectacularly come off so far. It's worked really well because he's been able to show, as I said before, the full gamut of his talents. The fact that he's not just a holder, that he can break into the box as well, but that he can be trusted in possession. He can be trusted not to dash out of his post. It seems like, speaking to people who know in Brazil, that the main competition is Fred of Manchester United, who I know a lot of people will shrug their shoulders at that, but he's been good for Brazil. You know, there's no getting around it. He's been very, very good for them. Now, funnily enough, there's maybe a link between him and Bruno in that one criticism of both of them at home is that they were a little bit one-footed. Bruno with the right, Fred with the left. And that can always be a bit of an issue for a defensive midfielder, I think. But Bruno has clearly really worked on that. And I think if you look at the margin of progression, I mean, it's been an astonishing couple of months for him. Then you add in the fact that he's going to have pre-season, Newcastle are going to have a better team, not have to try and fight their way out of a relegation scrap, hopefully, from their perspective, in the first half of next season. It gives him everything he needs to make that final push towards the 11. Now, where Fred sits with Erik ten Hag coming in, no one knows, do they? Because, you know, if they get Frankie de Jong in, maybe they'll reshape the midfield. It was clearly an issue for Manchester United this season, and whether he's seen as part of the problem or part of the solution, it's kind of 50-50, really, because obviously a lot of people think Manchester United could do with some better players in that area. So I think even though Fred is probably just about the man in possession at the moment, there's not a lot in it, and Bruno is in a really good position to push in the first 3 months of this season to get himself in that 11 when the World Cup starts in November.
Thanks so much for listening for True Faith's Bruno Guimarães podcast. Fantastic interviews, I'm sure you'll agree, from all four of our guests talking about the player, what a season we'll have coming up at Newcastle United. Massive season for Bruno, massive season for Newcastle United. If you've enjoyed these conversations, the full audio, the non-cut interviews with each individual are on our Patreon platform right now. You can get all of those podcasts plus about 30 to 40 extra Newcastle United podcasts every single month for just £6.60. Come and join us. Link in the description to this podcast, and it keeps this free podcast going. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back with another free podcast next week, as we've committed to producing at least one free podcast every single week throughout the close season. Can't wait for the season to get started. Thanks for listening.